Welcome to Worker Movement, a podcast dedicated to the working class, a podcast dedicated to raising class consciousness. This podcast is for you, for us, for the worker.
We are going to talk about how you have no ability to influence a national election. You may have hopes and dreams about the Biden-Harris ticket doing great things and removing the orange Cheeto from the White House, but your opinion and your actions have no ability to influence a national election.
And let's just reiterate this one more time. Unless you are a millionaire who runs a super PAC or a billionaire who runs multiple super PACs and research centers, or a CEO of major corporations that can get massive donors or have media outlets and blitzes or giant influencer campaigns, do not have the ability to influence a national campaign. None. You probably don't have the influence to help a statewide campaign. Like, some states have your senators, representatives, some have your governor. I mean, they all do. Some have their secretaries of state. You probably don't have the ability to influence those, which means that you should keep going down to the areas that you can influence, and that's going to go all the way down to the local level. So the idea that you have the ability to reach your arm out and you know, touch and influence what's happening in any other country, you can sign all the change that org petitions you want to, it's not going to change any national politics. Unless you have money or a large corporation.
Yeah, you also have nation states like Russia and China and various other national countries doing significant influencing campaigns that have probably been going on for ever and ever and ever. But we're just suddenly understanding that they're happening. All their stuff centrally planned. It's way more complicated than people understand. And it's happening and it's always happened.
Yeah, I mean, running a botnet isn't hard. I mean, you basically sign up accounts and you can pay people a dollar an account or whatever it is to get botnets. And what you really need is a giant, centrally planned organization that's going to run your psyops in newspapers and on Facebook and come up with clever memes and do things like Blue Lives Matter and provoke BLM fights and all those things that we're seeing in the media. Those are probably done by a nation state, either internally or externally. So, yeah, if you really, it boils down to the fact that you really think somebody would do that, just go on the internet and tell lies. And that's basically all it is, all day long, right? And so when our previous episode, we talked about influencing local level, it really came down to the fact that that's what you can influence. And so we don't want to stress about global things, right? Can you make a difference in the murder of all the innocent people that the United States government's helping Saudi Arabia do in Yemen? No, you probably can't. Unless, of course, you are a senator representative that can fight it, you really can't. Unless you're writing letter campaigns that are actually read, no influence. But what you can influence is whether or not a homeless individual has housing or undereducated or children have access, equal access to education and the law. Fighting the school board to make sure that all kids get, you know, free reduced lunch, not just those that need it, to fight to see if you have community gardens, to fight to have clean streets, all those things you can do at the local level, and that improves the lives of your friends and family.
Yeah, so you just mentioned a couple things, and means testing is bad. So it's much easier for the government to just give everybody access to lunch than to say, well, you know, if you were born on an odd day and, you know, there was a full moon, then you qualify for something. Just, that's stupid. Just everybody gets a right. No means testing.
Yeah, means testing is a neoliberal construct that's designed to influence you to not care about certain classes of people.
Yeah, and that's another tool that is kind of used at the federal level to get people to vote. So you have you know, your recently nominated VP advocating for, I don't know what the joke is, but it's like, oh, we're going to do student debt deferment. If you work in an underprivileged area and you know, have a last name that contains the letter H, because my name ends, you know, with Harris H, then you get student loan deferment or something. No, it's just a stupid breadcrumb that's intended to appeal to a certain demographic of people at the national level, and you have no ability to influence it. So don't try. Just, I mean, literally just ignore what happens nationally. It doesn't matter.
It does not matter. At the end of the day, and electoral politics is one of those things where people either believe in it or they don't. So half the country stays home on election day, the other half go out and vote because they think it's a constitutional right to go do it. Right? And so you have to ask yourself, can I affect things at the national level? And if you're in California and you, I guess, voted for Hillary Clinton and plus 300 million billion votes, I think she won by, what, 8 trillion votes last time in California?
Yeah.
I mean, they still got the same amount of electoral votes, and Hillary Clinton still lost. So even though she was plus 3 million on the total electability of everywhere, the people in California had no ability to change the outcome of the election. People in Utah, because it's a red state, really had no way of changing the outcome of the election. Because with the Electoral College, as long as your state tips 50%, that's all that matters. And so what we're getting at here is that you're so far removed from the actual process that the act of voting nationally, even though you're supposed to get out and do your constitutional thing and vote and whatever we want to tell ourselves, doesn't really have a big impact at the national level. It does, though, at your local level, because you can have races where someone won by 3 votes, and that 3 votes is you and 2 friends, or you and your 2 neighbors, you and your grandmother or grandfather you pull a nursing home to help them go vote, you sending in your mailing, your absentee ballot, whatever happens to be, those where it comes down to it matters. The county commissioner office, huge. It's at the county level is huge because you have now the tax infrastructure of the entire county, right? And affecting that probably has a bigger impact on your daily life than the impact of the national level.
And it's not that these issues aren't important, but it really comes down to being an issue of turnout and how much your vote is weighed. So at the national level, if you can dampen turnout by, let's say, 5 million people, that's going to have a measurable impact. But you don't have the ability to do that, either increasing turnout by 5 million or decreasing turnout by 5 million. But various actors that are running for elected office have national parties, they have super PACs, they have corporations that are absolutely willing to exert large amounts of resources to affect turnout. And we're seeing this with Donald Trump and the COVID response. So from a certain point of view, it's in his best interest to persist the COVID issue because it is going to deter people from voting in person. And at the same time, he's also kind of playing with the mail and ballots and potentially slowing the mail and whatever. So he's raising this sort of specter of COVID's going to be around so people can't vote in person, and I'm trying to throw up obstacles to make it harder to vote by mail. So he's attempting to nationally decrease turnout. He's having an influence at a national level.
So game theory says he should, right? Because he's a president and he wants to win a second term. You know, since we've limited it to 2 terms, he only gets basically 8 years to fuck the country as hard as he wants to or not. And he's not fucking the entire country because he's helping out those that have helped him out throughout his whole life. So from game theory point of view, if you are a billionaire, you're going to do everything in your power to make Trump president one more term. And this everything with the COVID response. So he wants to slow down the mail so you can't do mail-in ballots. At the same time, he's undermining everybody's belief system in the post office. He's showing that the post office isn't maybe an institution that we should be worth keeping. And then opening up for private institutions to come in and take over that same services. You see him attack Amazon, which fuck Amazon, but you see him attacking Amazon's decreased deal with the post office. But at the same time, the post office is delivering mail to the rural areas that gets it at a discounted rate. If it was pay for the last mile, like UPS does or FedEx does, rural America would not have access to the same amount of tools and things that are available for the city, because it costs way too much money to deliver to, you know, rural Alabama. With USPS, it is a flat rate, and we all sort of take that same pace. So again, in the best interest of game theory, for the president to open it up again for private industry, destroy the post office, to make sure that when he loses the election, he can say, oh, look, it was, Russian influence, whatever happened to be. So everything along the way he's doing to sow basically discomfort in the process, that he can say, look at all these holes that you poked in it, and everything I said is correct, and everything that I'm doing is right, and I'm the best and greatest. Now, again, fuck Trump, but as a candidate, he's doing everything he needs to do, I guess, to win this thing.
And he's creating influence at the national level, which is sort of bestowed upon him by his current office and also by the various institutions that are supporting him. So he has national influence. you do not. As somebody that is maybe perturbed or bothered by his whole destruction of basically the entire postal system, it sucks, but what can you actually do about it? And again, it's locally. Like, while it's a federal service, let's say Trump decides to destroy the USPS. If you have enough people in a given state that say, hey, it's not being done federally, but maybe we should start our own state postal service. Like, that's filling in an institution that needs to exist and eliminating influence at the federal level, which I don't necessarily agree with. The USPS should exist as a federal entity, and it should be intended to deliver goods to literally every human being in the country as efficiently as possible. We should also probably get rid of UPS, FedEx, DHL, anybody else competing in the package delivery. It just doesn't need to be redundant services. But the point is that Trump has influence, and he's exerting his influence by perturbing the USPS. And we don't have the ability to do that. So act locally.
So how can you act locally? How do you get involved? Well, in the last episode, we talked about going to the school board meetings. You can be involved with the PTA. You can go to city council. You can volunteer to any local organization that's around there. Meals on Wheels, things like that. You can decide to show up to the library to any events that are happening there. But we can't because, right now it's COVID season, but you can still get local, active locally that way, even at the county level. So there's things you can do to have real influence on people.
So here's another example of a way you don't have influence. When you see newscasts or newspapers or interviews with certain people, they're all dictating a narrative. They're choosing kind of through omission or by propping certain ideas up and downplaying others. And you see this in like congressional races that are primaries where you have maybe the established candidate, they represent a certain point of view, and they'll, corporations or whoever will run another candidate against that person. And they'll get the endorsements of the local newspaper and the TV stations, and there'll be ads everywhere, and they'll have like such and such a local hero supports this person. It's all a coordinated media effort to lift up the opinion of this one individual in opposition to another. And the important point here is that if these institutions are allowing you to speak or allowing anybody to speak, it's because the person speaking is supporting what the institutions sort of are selling. So it's a preservation of the institution, and they're actively engaging in this by promoting these individuals. So that's another way that influence is carried out. And so if you're running a campaign and you're not getting any media attention, that's kind of a sign that you're doing something right, because you're not receiving support from the institutions that you should kind of be opposing, like the paper that supports corporations and the newscasts that talk about how great cops are, or local authors that whitewash history about such and such event that was really detrimental to the working class.
And so again, if we peel back this onion a little bit more, we'll see that in previous episodes we talk about institutions, it's the institution's sole purpose is survival at all costs. And what was just discussed was, why are hosts selected, or why do they cover certain newscasts? And I want you to pay attention when you're watching any type of TV and look at what the actual opposition is, because a lot of times it's preferred opposition. And so in the case of, let's say, Biden versus Trump, was Biden the very best candidate, or was he actually the best opposition to what Trump really is in for the media and for corporate America? And it seems like we hear these things like, return to normal and all these normalcies and all this stuff. And what that really means is the market doesn't have to be disrupted, or they can predict what Biden will do. They can predict foreign policy. They can predict a bunch of things because Biden and Kabbalah will do the exact same thing that they want them to do, which is be a neoliberal piece of shit, sell out all of our institutions for corporate greed. And at the end of the day, you get poorer and you work harder while the people that they're serving get richer.
the corporations can predict what's going to happen if Biden is president because the corporations are the ones telling Biden what to do.
What to do. So who sits on all of the manufacturing boards or the, you know, council of manufacturers? It's not me and you. It's the corporations, right? Who's advising, you know, Supreme Court picks and things like that? It's not us. It's the corporations or people that are quote unquote advisors, right? Who gets the head jobs of the DOE, Department of Energy or Education? People that are friendly to the person running or have a vested interest in what's going on. So why was Betsy DeVos picked? Well, her brother, Eric Prince, runs a big corporation that gives money to the presidential candidates. She's right-leaning and wants to privatize all schools. So again, you put people in place that already have power and influence. Trump was already a media sensation before he ran for president. He already had his own shows. He already had national influence. Kamala got national influence when she attacked Joe Biden, basically agreed with anybody that says it's, you know, he's a rapist, which is awesome. But at the same time, she was a shitty prosecutor that put away a lot of people and did not care about the outcomes. She is a terrible human being and a class traitor. So what it comes down to, again, is you're not going to have any influence at the national level. Everything's locally. And even at the local level, there's going to be best interest in the papers, in the news cycles, in who gets to plan the parade or who gets to plan the 4-H events. Which people get chosen as the actual people at the 4-H fairs who get to serve food, right? That's all corporate greed, and it's all, you know, locally influenced. So who gets to put their name on the water tower, right? That's all done under the guise of, you know, like competitiveness, but really it has to do with who is pushing what agenda.
Yeah, so this idea that the people that are the most meritous will rise to the top is just not played out. The most pertinent example right now is we have Kamala Harris. She's one of the, I think she's the third female vice presidential nominees. She has a decent, you know, Biden has a decent chance of winning, so she might be the first female vice president, and that's a historic first. It has not happened before, therefore it is of significance. But at the same time, I don't think the kids in Afghanistan really give a shit that the drone being sent to kill their family was, this time, there's a female vice president. Nobody cares.
Yeah, we had many female secretaries of state that's killed lots of people in the guise of, you know, national security, right? We had Sarah Palin, who is arguably the best vice presidential candidate ever.
Because she wasn't a war criminal?
That, and she actually ran a shithole town in, she was governor of Alaska, right?
Yeah.
What was Kamala? A prosecutor who hated people? Put them away and arguably destroyed black communities, opposed no bills that got passed, did nothing that
she
was important.
She went after Jeff Sessions or William Barr, one of those corrupt fucks, but whatever.
Who gives a shit? It was Kabuki theater. I mean, it's just like, I'm yelling at you now because I had the floor, but we're best friends behind the scenes.
So when Jeff Sessions was getting attacked by the Senate, he was the attorney general, and he allegedly committed perjury during testimony. And then some months later, Trump shit-canned him. So why didn't the Senate haul his ass back and ask him some more questions? Because he didn't have the power of the office to hide behind executive privilege, whatever. Because nobody cares. It's theater.
Nobody gives shit.
And you don't have the ability to influence theater at the national level.
You don't have that? No, it's theater. It has not, I mean, these fake town halls that they have, I mean, it's all bullshit. It really is just to amuse you to think you have power at the national level, and you really don't. It's all about influence at the local level. We're going to keep hitting that over the head continuously because that's what we're pushing here. Because we know the biggest change can happen with arm's reach and not a mile away.
Yeah, so if you're engaging in a campaign and you've already won and the next cycle somebody wants to run against you, you should destroy the opposition to create a barrier to future opponents. You know, thinking twice about wasting their time. It's all about resource allocations.
You know, so we're talking about how Kamala and Biden are going to run this nationally pleasing campaign, and Trump apparently is going to probably go a little more, you know, scorched earth. So the question becomes, from just a pure game theory point of view, how should you run your own campaign, especially if it's local or state level, right? If you're running against entrenched, you know, politicians, people whose name have been on the ballot for the last 80 years, what do you do?
I think a lot of people who have never really been part of the electoral process want to go in there and pitch their ideas about X, Y, and Z and why if we did this, you know, we'd have kids that are smarter and healthier and all that good stuff. And yes, it's important to have policy, but at the same time, the campaign is a proxy for your ability to push your ideas. So if you run, it needs to be absolute scorched earth. You need to go after the opposition, both in terms of their ideas and in terms of winning, because your objective is to win. And this also creates a barrier to the next person, like should you win, creates a barrier for the next person that runs against you to think twice about saying, the person that ran against this person got humiliated last time. Do I really want to waste my time and resources to have my reputation ruined? And from a resource allocation perspective, you want to create that barrier of entry. You see this a little bit happening with the various members of what Trump calls the squad, which is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Rashida Tlaib in Michigan, and then Ilhan Omar in Minnesota, where they all ran for re-election. They all got primary challenges by the establishment DNC, and they all fairly comfortably won. I think they all did some level of negative campaigning, which I think was the right play, because the idea is, like, next cycle, don't come after me because I will destroy you. I will waste your money and you will lose. Like, that is the correct message to send.
Not only is the correct message to send, it's from game theory point of view, why would you want to lose? The flip side is, if you are a non-incumbent running against an incumbent, so let's say you want to unseat a shitlib in your district, congressional district, you need to run the most aggressive piece of shit campaign you can do. I mean, going after every vote they took, every piece of money they took, I mean, you have to really scorch earth the candidate and give up every piece of political, I guess, viability you have for the future and just go after them. Or you're not going to win, because the incumbent is going to win with a 30-point advantage pretty much every single time. Same thing with city council.
Yeah, because if you look at it from the long-term game theory perspective, a lot of people have this short-sighted view of electoralism where I'm going to run for this election and I'm going to go scorched earth, and if I lose, like, I'm out. No, it's you're going to run and you're going to go scorched earth. And if you win, great. But if you lose, you've laid the foundation for, you know, somebody else or the next people, or you've raised awareness about whatever your issue is, that this is happening locally, and it makes people think, it causes a change in policy just through the act of raising these various issues. And being policy focused is very important too, where you can go after somebody over and over and over and over. But at the end of the day, it needs to be tied back to an actual policy. So identity politics is this idea that a group of people vote in unison based on their identity. A classic historical example of this was the discussion around JFK being a Catholic and the expectation that all Catholics would vote based on their identity as Catholics. In present-day identity politics, most often correlates with race and gender identities. Identity politics doesn't really work in this context, because a lot of people aren't heavily motivated to vote for a non-incumbent based on identity politics. People are warm and comfortable with the incumbent because they're the incumbent. There's just historical inertia of, like, well, this person's been in their position and nothing bad has happened, so I'll vote for them again. It's much more difficult to run an identity politics-based non-incumbency campaign.
Identity politics is one of the areas where, if you take a look at it from the point of view of game theory, it really only works if the majority of the people voting for you are your identity. If you're pulling in a smaller group of people, it's really hard to win it over. So you're seeing Trump's dog whistles to the white working class and attempting to use racial divide. You're looking at Biden picking up the first female black vice president pick to try to bring over the people of color. So, I mean, they are attempting to still play identity politics at the national level for whatever reason. You know, they're just trying to win votes. But, you know, local level, it's really, really tough, unless, of course, you are a majority minority in which you need to then, you know, pick the person that best represents you.
So for some of this stuff, we're talking at it at like a fairly high level of, you know, you're running in a congressional district and that's, you know, 700,000 people. But at the same time, we're also advocating for doing stuff locally. And our point isn't that you should go run for a congressional seat. It's that some of the lessons that can be learned by people running for congressional seats can be applied locally. So the example of the squad where they ran negative ads as a deterrent for future people running against them, you know, that's a good strategy. If you're an incumbent, that can work. If you're seeking to unseat an incumbent and you're in this minority majority district where you are the, you know, correct identity where there are the most people, you know, maybe play up your identity. At the same time, also advocate for policy, because at the end of the day, policy is what eventually will carry you through. And it allows you to have some basis of saying, I advocated for this last cycle and I'm still advocating for it this cycle. There's also this emphasis on needing to say that as your leader, I put forth Bill XYZ and did this. At some level, it's okay to just say, yeah, I didn't really concretely do anything that affected your life, but I prevented a lot of stupid shit from happening. That's an okay thing to say.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, I lost every vote 1-4 on the city council, but I need two other people to vote with me on this stuff. And guess what? I support this, 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 and this, and that's better for the community. Like, that is a piece to play because no one individual can win 3 seats on a, you know, a 5-person panel and become the majority.
Yeah, and this is where having a history behind you of actually doing things is really important. And case in point, Trump has been a terrible human being for his entire life, and people think that he's going to change, and Biden has been a terrible human being for his entire life. People think he's going to change. And Kamala's been a terrible human being for her entire life, and she's never going to change. And Pence is a terrible, terrible human being.
Arguably the worst of the four.
I mean, look at Indiana. He is probably the worst of the four. I mean, Biden has voted for murder of multiple people, and so did Pence while he was in the House. Pence arguably caused people to get HIV by ending needle programs, like safe needle programs in Indiana. So again, at the national level, you have nothing. I mean, what the fuck? And even the third parties aren't doing well. They're just like, God damn. To get back to this campaign strategy of scorched earth, I'm already going to scorched earth. Fuck these people. Don't vote for them. But vote locally. Find who's really important to you and vote. I mean, get behind the campaigns that are really important to you. Get behind things like ballot initiatives if you have those. You know, getting past millages. I always vote to increase taxes on for schools and decrease funding for police. I mean, they should just militantly do that every single time. And this whole idea here of the game theory thought process is not only what's best for you, but what's going to have the best outcome for everybody. And so if you run and you can set a tone for what city council should be, just through action and through comments and through just being a dickhead during council meetings, that is setting a tone for what other people can get away with. Because normally it takes one person to speak up before everybody else in the room will start raising their voice against it too. So just by leading by example like that, you can enable other people to have the same voice as you and get out there and kick some ass.
For future episodes and to learn more about the worker movement, join us at workermovement.com.